So my name is Laura Slatkin. I'm one of the co-founders of New York Collaborates for Autism, and I'm also the CEO of Nest Fragrances, a luxury lifestyle beauty brand that I started in 2005. So I guess I'm just going to take you on the journey that I traveled when my son David was diagnosed with autism. Actually, when he was diagnosed officially, I was on a business trip. I was in Atlanta at a trade show, and I got home late in the evening and went into our bedroom. My husband was lying in bed and said, you know, I didn't want to tell you this while you were on your business trip, but we did get David's diagnosis back, and he's been diagnosed with PDD-NOS. And at that time, I obviously didn't know what that meant. It was pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. So I just went into the library, got on the computer, and discovered that PDD-NOS was really a nice way of saying your child has autism. And, you know, it was a very, very scary moment for us. And I actually cried myself to sleep that night. But the next morning when I got up, my husband said to me, you know, crying isn't going to help David, isn't going to help Allie, his twin sister, isn't going to help our marriage, and it's certainly not going to help our family. So, you know, I suggest you roll up your sleeves and you do something about it rather than take this, you know, sort of sorrowful approach. And it was then that I realized that that was the task ahead of me. And I went to some nearby bookstores. Actually, one was at Hunter College, trying to find anything I could on autism because I knew nothing about it. I didn't know anyone that had a child with autism back then, and I really didn't have any knowledge at all. So I read all these books on autism, and I started to really delve into the community. I reached out to every doctor that had an expertise on autism. I went to every university, every hospital, read so many different books, and just sort of connected and got myself into, you know, embedded in the community. But one of the things that sort of started me on my journey is I read this one book written by a doctor, and I actually called the doctor and said, would you be willing to see my son David? And she said yes, miraculously, and I had this meeting with Dr. Bridget Taylor, and she took one look at my son and she said, you know, I really suggest that you get this kid's name on the waiting list for a school for children with autism. And she said, because you just don't know where he's going. You don't know how severe he's going to be or how challenging he's going to be. And they're very, very difficult to get into. So then I started my exploration in terms of what was out there educationally for my son. And I found that all the really great schools for children with autism were in New Jersey. And I was very disappointed as a New Yorker to learn that I wasn't able to find a quality program in the community that I lived. So one of our first tasks was to establish a school for children with autism. And when I began to meet with various different people, I realized that in order to really get this thing done properly, we needed to build a foundation and a board comprised of friends and colleagues that were in a position to help. So I got several of my friends together and found a few people that were very knowledgeable about schools, and we built New York Collaborates for Autism. And one of my board members was kind enough to introduce me to Joel Klein, who was then our school chancellor. We had breakfast one morning, and I said to him, you know, we have a son with autism, and we want to establish a state-of-the-art school for children with autism in New York City. And he said to me, I have over 5,000 kids with autism in the New York City public school system. I need your help. So we got together and planned the launch of a charter school for children with autism, which is the first charter school for children with autism in the state of New York. And we established that school as a model school for the New York City public school system. And then we advanced, you know, we traveled on and decided that our next initiative was going to be starting an autism training institute with Hunter College. because part of the problem in the New York City public school system is there are not enough qualified teachers. And what better place to build a program than Hunter College, who has a tremendous reputation for training and educating teachers. So to build this program for autism with Hunter College was a tremendous opportunity. And then from there, we went on to building a major brain institute with Columbia University, Cornell, and New York Presbyterian Hospital. Because in New York City, if you needed a child diagnosed, if you evaluated, there wasn't one place you could go in New York City. It was amazing. It's the most important city in the world, yet it lacked resources. And we gathered these three institutions to build this major brain institute, and it just opened earlier this year. And, you know, we are now on our way to building a residential program, a state-of-the-art residential program for adults with autism, because 85% of the population is under 22 years old, and we're looking at a huge amount of adults coming our way, and there's really no housing and no residential opportunities for them. So it was, you know, it's always been a really fascinating sort of journey for me. I remember when David was diagnosed and we were discovering that there weren't any schools available in our community, we also wondered, gee, you know, what causes autism? And how far are we away from finding the cure for autism? So one of our board members, Dita Blair, who sits on the board of the NIH, was kind enough to arrange a meeting for me with the institute director, Dr. Tom Insel. He's the director for the National Institute of Mental Health, which is the institute that covers autism. And my husband and I went down to the NIH, and we sat with Dr. Tom Insel, and he explained to us that we really don't know anything about autism. We are nowhere. And it was a very scary moment for my husband and I, because we sat there and listened to the head of the NIH Institute tell us, we don't know anything about autism. And we were just depressed, because we, you know, first of all, our son was just diagnosed. But second of all, we felt that there was so much that needed to be done here. Where were we going to begin? And that same evening, my friend Dita had invited me to a very important black tie dinner at the Library of Congress. It was 50 years celebrating the genome. And all the major geneticists that were instrumental in sequencing the genome were invited to this very special dinner, black tie in the Library of Congress. It was a really beautiful evening. And I had the pleasure of sitting next to Tom Insel that night. And at one point in the evening, they asked all the geneticists from around the globe to please stand in recognition, all those that would have been instrumental in sequencing the genome. And these are some of the brightest, smartest, Nobel Prize-winning scientists in the world. And it was a very, very magical moment. And Tom Insel turned to me and he said, if you could get any one of these scientists to focus their efforts on autism, we would get where we need to be much faster. The secret to moving the field of autism forward on a research basis is to identify the brightest scientists around the globe and get them to lend their expertise to autism. And that was a brilliant statement. And the next morning, my husband and I flew back to New York. We were just on cloud nine with the pearl of wisdom that was advice we could take and run with. So we planned a major think tank where we invited some of the smartest neuroscientists from around the globe to brainstorm with autism experts for 3 days. And we had a dinner that followed that think tank. And that was the beginning of a major movement in autism. At that conference, amazing things happened. A couple that organized the conference with me, Marilyn and Jim Simons, who have a child with autism, set up a foundation to fund research, and they're now the second largest foundation funding autism behind the NIH. And another couple that attended that conference was Suzanne and Bob Bright. who had a grandson, Christian, who was diagnosed with autism. And out of that conference, they founded Autism Speaks, which is now the nation's largest advocacy organization supporting families and individuals with autism. Both of those, so that conference happened actually 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, these three couples, my husband and I, Marilyn and Jim Simons, Bob and Suzanne Wright, each one of us built three separate organizations with three separate missions. And over the past 10 years, we've done such amazing things as a community. We've raised the awareness for autism. You know, people around the globe are now familiar. It's part of their vocabulary. We have the Simons Foundation that has funded all this major research. And New York Collaborates for Autism has been successful in building these programs in partnership with these wonderful institutions in our own community. And I think this whole, you know, I'm very, very proud to be part of this movement that has taken place over the past 10 years. But it's important to know that, you know, when you're faced with something that's personal to you, your passion drives you to do amazing things. And selfishly, it's been my way to overcome the pain that I have in having a son with autism. My son David, who again is now 14 years old, is severely impaired by autism. He doesn't have any language at all. He's never had one single word. He has aggressive behaviors. He's cognitively very challenged, so it's very, very difficult for him to learn. So all of these things combined, it's been very, very challenging and painful for all of us in our family. But this work has enabled us to feel better about the situation that's been sort of handed to us. And it's been very, very rewarding and fulfilling. And it's been a big, big part of our lives over the past 10 years and will continue to be for the next foreseeable future. So it's been a journey that we've traveled on that has been fascinating in the sense that it's broadened our horizons as individuals and really enhanced our lives. You know, when I think back of all the friendships that I've made over the years and all the brilliant scientists that I've had the pleasure of having to my home for dinner, all the major philanthropists that have been supportive of our work, learning about how other people advance different fields for different disorders. It's all been fascinating and very, very interesting. And I think in a big way, it's helped my marriage also, because it's made our lives so fascinating that it always keeps it interesting. And I think that's important they've done studies on what really causes, you know, what's a significant factor in terms of a successful marriage. And it's about keeping your lives interesting so that it doesn't always, you know, doesn't get dull or boring. And this aspect of our life has really enhanced our family life in many ways. So, you know, there are people along the way that have been extremely helpful to me and my husband and our organization, and have lent advice, and that's been very, very meaningful. And I remember when we first started planning our charter school, we attended a cocktail party at my friend's apartment, and Hillary Clinton was a speaker. And afterwards we introduced ourselves, told her what our mission was, and she said, you know, first of all, she was very, very supportive, but she said, you know, you have to remember when you're planning these things that your largest donor is the government. And that was probably the smartest piece of advice anyone had given us along the way, because the government is your largest donor and your most important partner when building these private-public partnerships that are so impactful. So working with the New York City Public School System, working with Hunter College, and engaging public institutions in the work that we do has been able us to really leverage our work and make a meaningful impact. I just, you know, this is a sort of an informal session, so I just wanted to, you know, sort of welcome you to ask any questions. If you have any questions, yes.
So, what you do is absolutely amazing, and parents,
Right. Well, I think that, you know, because we've done such a great job at raising the awareness of autism, a lot of fantastic programs have been built and services have been organized to support the community. And when you have a child that you think has traits of autism and is mildly affected by autism, it's a great thing in the sense that you can get support and treatment and therapy for your child. So I always akin autism to, like, there's an outlet on the wall, and then you have a plug. And sometimes the plug is kind of hanging out of the outlet, and some really great therapy can force that plug into the outlet and for the connections in the brain to engage. You know, obviously with my son, the outlet's on one side of the wall, the plug's on the other. So it's not going to happen. But when you have a child that's mildly affected, some really superior therapy can engage that child or just teach that child the certain social skills they're lacking that enhance their lives and make their lives easier. As far as depression is concerned, you know, there's a really fantastic book that my friend wrote on depression, The Atlas, Noonday Demon by Andrew Solomon, an atlas on depression. It's about 800 pages long, but it's a brilliant read. And, you know, he talks a lot about treatment for depression and all the wonderful drugs that are available in the market that treat depression, and it's life-altering and life-changing. So it's about really finding the right doctors that can help your son and really... You know, I know sometimes it's difficult to face it and to, you know, to address it, but you've got to just jump in there and find the brilliant doctors and scientists in your community that can help you and get your kid the support they need. It's really important. How old is he?
22.
Ah. It is challenging. You know, my daughter has ADHD, and she gets very, very stressed over schoolwork because it's so challenging for her. And, you know, it's difficult. It's sad to watch them sort of suffer with whatever they're suffering with. But, you know, it's a continue. You know, with depression, it's really about the right mix of drugs, and, you know, dosages are everything. You know, so... You know, you're taking one drug and you say it doesn't work or the side effects are so bad, but it's about dosage. So sometimes it's about finding that right doctor that prescribes the exact right dosage in combination with other drugs that, you know, really makes a big difference. So it's about keep looking. If the person that's you're with isn't giving you, you know, the proper treatment that is making a difference, just you got to keep finding that right doctor. That's okay. Well, I'm fortunate in the sense that I have a lot of support at home. And David now does not live at home. He lives at the New England Center for Children, which is a residential program outside, right outside of Boston here. So he is at New England Center for Children and has two caregivers always taking care of him out in the community. So I don't really have to worry too much about David. He comes home once a month to visit us, and we go up as often as we can. So, you know, that's more or less under control. And, you know, it's always hard to be running a business and have a family. And I spoke earlier about that work-life balance. And I think one of the most important things to remember is that, you know, as a working mom, you really need to remember that often many of us feel so guilty that we're working, we should be home with the kids. And I always say that the greatest gift you can give your children is the fact that you are working and setting an example, and you're a great role model for your children. I know my daughter is so independent because she's had to be independent all her life. You know, I've always been working. She's always had to make friends and you know, navigate life by herself. And I think that that's really important. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I do. So I think that joint fundraising is really a great way to go when you're small. Partnering with another organization that can, you know, assist you in putting together a fundraiser and having a split of the profits is always fantastic. You know, it's hard to do it alone, but together you can really, you know, leverage your resources. And that's something that the New York Collaborates for Autism, we've often partnered with Autism Speaks. In fact, Monday night, we had an event where my husband and I were honored, and we raised $3.3 million together. But it was really a great group effort. And could we have raised 1.6 whatever on our own? Maybe, probably not. I think there's more strength in numbers, you know, when you join forces. So I think that's really a terrific way to do it. You know, you just find another organization that does something different, but in the same field of interest. Yes. Uh huh. Supporting them. So the question is whether I've traveled internationally and what's going on in the autism world and how they're supporting individuals with autism around the globe. You know, Autism Speaks has this wonderful Lighted Up Blue program where they've been going to all the different countries, encouraging them to recognize autism, light their, you know, the equivalent of their White House up blue or major corporate buildings. And it's been very instrumental in raising awareness around the globe. And we've been meeting with various countries through Autism Speaks to talk about what are we doing here in the United States? What are you doing in Italy and France and England and India? I visited Qatar about a year or two ago. And it was really interesting because the Sheikh of Moza was building a whole conference and inviting everyone from the United States that had an expertise in autism to come to Qatar to talk about best practices, what were some of the things we were doing in the States, how could we share our knowledge about autism treatment and research with their scientists and their educators. And I know that the New England Center for Children has programs that they're building in Abu Dhabi and Dubai that are very, very effective. And I think it's important for us to share our expertise, because we are really the only country that is on top of this disorder from a treatment perspective. And, you know, the more connections we make, the more meetings we have, the better. Because I get questions all the time, people that live in Spain, people that live in Italy, where do I go, what do I do? And it's hard because the programs they have over there are not programs of excellence. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So socially, it is very difficult.
Yeah.
Well, this same fellow has some talents. And one of his gifts is athletic ability. And when he was a senior in high school, they carried him as a gym buddy to the autistic kids. And he shot in that area. And yet, he finds it very difficult now to pursue college because of,
right.
And so my question to you is, in your work now, what I begin to learn about that little subset of the therapeutic modality for autistic kids seems to be quite beneficial. I do physical education, modeling sports, and you and working with your groups, could you have an insight on that as an emerging?
You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of different, like there's a horseback riding therapy, there's swimming with the dolphins, there's all these different programs, and people ask me about them all the time. And I say, you know, they're not a cure for anything, but if the person that's affected by, whether it's depression or autism or any of these disorders, finds great joy and comfort in these activities, it's tremendously helpful to have that, you know, very healthy outlet for themselves. And I think that, you know, it's a great thing. And I also want to say about 20, 21, 22-year-olds, when you're growing up, you're forced to go to school, elementary school, middle school, high school, college, and you're forced to do things that you may not be particularly good at, right? And then as you get older, you get to pick and choose what you want to do and how you spend your time. And that's when an individual blossoms. You know, it's the stress of having to take math or take history or Latin or Spanish when you don't really like these subjects. And you fail at them because you're not good at them. And it, you know, it affects your self-esteem. And then when you graduate, you get to do exactly what you want to do. So that's why you take someone like Bill Gates, who was probably affected by Asperger's, but he's, you know, heading up one of the most important computer technology companies in the world. And he's with his peers and his colleagues where he's comfortable. He's comfortable in that environment. So I think once you get past college and high school, all of, that stage of life where you're forced to do things that you're not necessarily good at, and you get to go where you want to go, whether it be athletic programs, whether it be music or computers or whatever that person's interest is, life becomes a lot easier. Does anyone have any other questions? Yes. Well, I think a really terrific thing to do as a friend is to say to them one day, hey, why don't you guys spend the whole day together doing whatever you want to do, go out to dinner, and we'll take care of your child. That is probably one of the greatest gifts you can give them, because it's a very, very challenging disorder, and parents never have time to spend by themselves and enjoy each other's company. So that could be one of the greatest gifts you can give them, I would think. Well, you know, even if you invited them over for the day and you know, or maybe you planned a day where you went to the beach, and while you're on the beach, you took care of the daughter while they could just rest and lay on a towel for an hour, that's a great privilege when you have a child with autism. So just maybe going to, you know, getting out there as a group and just picking up the responsibility of taking care of the child so they could just have a relaxing day. I know that that's what moms and dads really talk about the most. And then, of course, if they go on to, if the child goes to a special school and they're, again, trying to fundraise, right? Helping them fundraise for the institution that's taking care of their child is always really valued as well. Yes? Yeah, so that's an interesting topic. So Allie, well, David was diagnosed at 17 months, so they're twins. So we had 40 hours of therapy coming through our apartment, taking care of David. And we decided very early on that we would get a psychologist for Allie. So Allie saw a psychologist once a week, just to understand what is autism, how do I explain autism to others, when my playdates come over from school, my brother's jumping up and down, making funny noises, how do I explain that? So that was really helpful for her. But then they go through natural stages where they're embarrassed, they don't want to talk about autism, they don't want to admit they have a brother with autism. They go through various, you know, stages. In kindergarten, she wanted to talk about it. You know, as she got older, she didn't want to talk about it. And interestingly enough, she just turned 13 and had her bat mitzvah. And in your bat mitzvah, you have to make a speech. And Allie was, you know, debating what she wanted to really talk about. And one day she came home from school, she said, I know exactly what I'm going to talk about. I know what my speech is going to be, and I'm going to go into the library, I'm going to type it out. Don't come in there. And 2 hours later, she came out, and she had written the most beautiful speech about her brother with autism and how important it was for people to have compassion and to accept people with differences, and told a really amazing story. I had taken her to the park one day, and she saw a boy in a wheelchair. And she looked at the little boy in the wheelchair, and she smiled at him. And he had this huge smile back to her. And she said, I did that because I know what it's like to be stared at when we go to the park with David. And I knew if I smiled at that little boy, I would make his day. And this is the speech that she gave in front of 100 of her friends in Temple. Then most of them, I would say 80% of them, didn't even know she had a brother with autism. So it was really a beautiful moment where she just chose that special day to talk about autism in a way that really made us proud. So I think, you know, whatever we've done, something, we did something right. So she's turned out okay. But, you know, I also saw a doctor very early on when David was diagnosed who said to me, you know, if your son is unable to learn and make progress, please don't beat your head against a wall trying to make it happen if it's not going to happen. And that was really smart advice. He said, you know, focus on your daughter, focus on your family, focus on your marriage. Don't do what I've seen other mothers do, which is just give up their whole life for that one kid with autism. It's not healthy for anyone. So that's important. Yes. Mm-hmm. Working with hospitals is enormously challenging, and working with the government, any agent is enormously challenging. Anytime you get into the bureaucracy of things, it's one of our biggest hurdles. So we wanted to, when we built our Institute for Autism, we wanted to do it with Columbia, Cornell, and New York Presbyterian Hospital, based on their strengths. Columbia had a great strength in the neuroscience research. Cornell had a great clinical program, and New York Presbyterian Hospital had the property. So it was important to bring these three institutions together to work together, and it was nearly impossible because they're all so protective of their donors, their scientists, their work. It was nearly impossible to get them to focus on collaborating. So that was always very difficult, and it is difficult working on our charter school, getting our charter approved by the city, the state, and getting through all those hurdles took us 3 years to get through that system. So, and it took us 3 years, 4 years to get these three institutions to write a memorandum of understanding to work together. But you need to just need to keep pushing. You just have to keep pushing. Yeah, it's all, but you have to keep pushing, because once you break through, it's like walking into the ocean and the waves are crashing. And where they're crashing, those are all your hurdles. But once you pass that crashing wave point, it's all smooth. You just got to get through those waves. It's true. Yes. You know, I think it starts locally in a very small way. So it might be that, you go to the local Dunkin' Donuts or White Castle and get them to, do a small program, and it's effective and it works, and, who's ever there brings it up the ladder corporately. I think, if you can show a corporation that it can be beneficial to them in more than just a social way, but more, from the bottom line perspective. For example, there's a, what's the name of that sneaker store? It's a major, what? Foot Locker, thank you. So there's a Foot Locker on 86th Street, and they sell sneakers, but they also sell these t-shirts, and it's a huge table of t-shirts. But of course, every single day, the t-shirt table gets a mess. It's a mess at the end of the day. And so a friend of mine had a child with autism, a daughter with autism, went over to the sneaker store, and she said, my daughter will fold those t-shirts every day for $3 an hour. And they were paying, whatever they were paying their employees. And she just needs a job. And sure enough, they hired her, and she folds those t-shirts happily all day long. And they're thrilled because they're saving money, and someone's doing it. And my friend's daughter feels fantastic because she gets praised every day by all the employees that work there. So I think it's about, starting it small. If you don't have the corporate connections, if you don't know the CEO of a major corporation that's willing to give it a try, you have to start at the bottom and travel up. Have you done that?
Yeah.
Well, that was a test that's given to all people that have to enter the company. Well, then, yeah. So then you really weren't, you know... Right. Yeah. Yeah, because that's trying to fit like a round peg into a square hole, and that's just not going to happen. You have to have their willingness to accept that which is, you know, the person that's being interviewed, that their capabilities and strengths aren't going to necessarily be sufficient to pass that. I mean, that, you know, you're setting yourself up for, you know, for failure right out of the bat. Right off the bat. Yes. Well, it's about bringing in the expertise that's needed to really advance a child with a learning disorder, and I think that that's not always done at the local level. They really need to partner with institutions in their community that have the expertise. So, for example, New England Center for Children, I know, goes into many public programs within their community and has their teachers training, you know, the teachers in the public school or private school on how to educate children with autism. I mean, it's really about seeking the great expertise, because, you know, so many schools, you know, have individuals with autism in their class, and they don't bother to find out what are the best practices, what are the best treatments, what are the best methodologies for treating this individual with autism. And there are methodologies out there that are state-of-the-art and are, you know, science-based and data-driven that have proven to be effective. And I think it's about finding those, those methodologies and making sure that a school offers the best possible solution for that child. Anyone else have any questions? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, Autism Speaks is a very thorough website, and they do have a section for resources, so you can go onto that website and plug in your zip code and find out what are the best programs in your community that offer family support. But I also want to concur with you that it is important for families that are affected by autism to know other families that are affected by autism. And that reminds me of, we sold our company, Slack & Company, to Limited Brands in 2005. So we spent a lot of time in Columbus, Ohio. And when we got to Columbus, Ohio, everyone said, oh, you have to meet Marcy and Bill Ingram because they own White Castle and they have a child with autism. And sure enough, we met Marcy and Bill. And they weren't involved in the autism community at all. But we started to talk. I mean, they had funded some programs at their local hospital. So they were philanthropic in that way. But they really weren't involved in the autism community. They didn't know other families with autism. And she and I encouraged her to start an Autism Speaks walk in Columbus, Ohio, which she did. She chaired it. And the very first sort of kickoff event, she stood up there and, you know, she's in her, I guess her 60s. And she said, you know, I have a son with autism. And she went on to tell her story to, you know, a group of several hundred Autism Speaks walk leaders. And I have never spoken publicly about the fact that I have a child with autism ever. And here I am looking out over hundreds of families that all have shared this challenging disorder. And it feels so terrific. And she went on to build one of the most profitable walks in the country. And then she got White Castle to do a point of sale program and raises millions of dollars every year. And it was interesting because she at White Castle, she went to a corporate headquarter meeting where they fly in the managers from all over the country. And she said, she got up in front of all of the managers to talk about the point of sale program. And she said, I want everyone who knows someone with autism to raise their hand. And about a third of the room raised their hand. She said, now I want everyone to raise their hand because Bill and I have a son with autism. There, you know, he's the CEO of White Castle. And it was just such a moving moment to see all those hands go up and for her to go public with her story and really help make a difference. And I think, you know, that's what we have to do. And knowing families that, you know, have, you know, we became very, very good friends, Marcy and I, and we're able to share some of the challenges. And it's important for families to meet other families that are affected by autism. Well, everyone, I really want to, does anyone else have any questions now? Thank you so much for coming today and listening. It's a pleasure to meet you all. Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.